Hey, what's going on, man? We got another podcast going on. This one is with me and my wife. All right, a little bit before I went to jail, which was, I think it was about 5 months before that I went to jail before. And that was in the month of November, 2016, for domestic violence. Now, I told you the name of my podcast is The Truth. So I'm gonna always keep it real and tell the truth. So, I'm gonna ask my wife some questions, or she can ask me, and then we're gonna go from there. But so I went to jail for domestic violence. I think I paid, my bond was like $200,000 or something crazy like that. I gave up 5% of that and got back out of jail, and they dropped all charges. So that was that. But so when I went to jail for fighting the death penalty, my wife was right there with me. You know, I had a lot of time to think. You know, I was down 23 and a half hour lockdown every day, 7 days a week. So I had a lot of time on my hand to think about stuff that I needed to do, stuff that I didn't do, shit that I just fucked up on. I plainly was like just a fucked up person, right? Not treating my wife right. Did some cheating. All kind of shit, bro. You know, but I got her right here with me, and I want her to ask me some questions, I'm gonna ask her some questions. So, baby, during our struggles when we was fighting and all that kind of stuff, how was you feeling?
I was feeling not appreciated. I was very stressed out, confused, and I didn't understand why.
Why? Okay. All right. Well, do you think it was like money issues or what do you think? You think family was in people in my head or in your head or what do you think?
No, absolutely not. I don't think it was money issues at all, because I would say at least 90% of our relationship and marriage, we've always been very self-sufficient. We've had money financially. We never really, really, really struggled, but we had issues, but it wasn't, I don't think that was the issue for you being abusive. I think the issue was your growing up. I think it has a lot to do with maybe you were exposed to, with what you've seen, maybe with what you were put through, just your past lifestyle as a child, your childhood, your upbringing. I also think that it has a lot to do with the fact that I am a very independent woman, and I'm very, very strong-minded. And, I'm not submissive. I'm never going to be submissive for any man. And when there are other children involved that have nothing to do with necessarily like me, I'm the stepmother, though we don't use the term stepmother. And we're talking specifically about the kids that are not in the home at that time that were in and out of the home. Those were our issues with fighting. It was always a baby mama, making complaints or saying this or saying that, when in fact I was an awesome, and to this day still an awesome, second mother in their lives. And you have the children that are being manipulated, brainwashed by these mothers because they're no longer in a relationship with you, or maybe they see what it is that we have and what we're building as a family. And our children have mom and dad, where, your other children, they have you, but they have mom and you in separate homes. So I think a lot of our fights were because of that, because maybe I didn't agree to something that you said, or I was more defensive when, I felt like there was boundaries being overstepped, specifically when a baby mama will call you at like midnight, trying to get back into, your life, but sexually wanting a relationship with you. There are certain things and guidelines and lines that should never be crossed when you have a wife and you have a husband. And there were so many lines that were crossed. So the physicalness came in when I would say something, speak up for myself, and you didn't like it. You are very dominant. You're very aggressive. Again, same thing that I said about me. You're very, very strong-minded, and you are the man. But a relationship and marriage is not, it's not 90-10. It is 50-50 no matter way you look at, no matter how you want to look at it. It's 50-50. I deserve respect. You deserve respect. And when you became my husband, nothing and no one could ever tell me anything about my husband. And you, for so many years, I feel like you didn't understand that. Marriage, I became first. I became, besides God, I became second in your life, but really, in actuality, number one in your life. Not your baby mama or your daughter or your son. No, it's not. That's not how it works. So I think a lot of the abuse, going back to the question, is or was pertaining to just outside influences. Yes, it was sometimes family. I would say more, and we're being honest, I would say more your family than my family, because I'm the type of person, I don't run and tell my mom or my sister everything that happens in my home. I know how people's reactions can be when they see you again. They may start feeling different about you. Your family, some people in the family are very negative. They don't like that you have a strong, beautiful, independent, educated wife. They don't like that. They think I'm bougie. There's nothing bougie about me, but if that's how they feel, I walk with it. I accept it.
So what do you think we need to do moving forward to make things better in our relationship?
Number one, we definitely need to keep outside influences out of our life, out of our home, and out of our heads, because we have to continue to explore on our own. We're learning, we're making mistakes, we are growing together, and if we can keep people out of that, right, out of our relationship, that can help. But the main thing that we need to be successful moving forward, if we really want to be, you know, 60 and 70 and 80 together and seeing our children have grandchildren and we have grandkids and, you know, unfortunately us, you know, putting each other, you know, away as far as passings. And, you know, I think that the main thing is communication. Right. Communication, respecting each other's views, differences, opinions, not getting upset when I don't agree. I'm getting older. I'm starting to forget things a little bit. I have to be honest. We have a lot on our plate. Yes. We have a big family, and we have a lot going on. And I have been through a lot, just like you. Maybe not as as intense, but definitely been through a lot because I've been your rock. I've been by your side.
Let me ask you this. I'm gonna rewind a little bit. But when I was incarcerated, how did you feel about when people was telling you to leave me? Our past, how we used to fuss and fight with each other. So how did you feel about that, honestly?
I will be honest with you. I thought about it. And I thought about it because, not because of what you were facing. I thought about it because I felt defeated. I felt I had nothing and I had no one except for my family. And at that time, even though it was a handful, I only had the people that I knew would never turn on me and who only really, truly, dearly loved me genuinely. And I didn't have that from your side of the family. So to answer your question, I considered leaving you. But the reason that I thought of it like once, maybe twice. And then when I looked at my children and when I went to see you for the first time and I seen the tears in your eyes and I seen the hurt and the confusion, when I seen you, I looked and I was like, there's no way. No one can put that on my heart and no one can convince me, and they can keep saying it. And when they say it again, I'm gonna shut their asses down. And that's exactly what I did. And eventually they didn't speak it again. They knew I was gonna be your ride or die.
All right, when I was incarcerated and you was going to church, did that help you a lot?
It did. It did help me. It helped me because I was able to go into a sanctuary, obviously, and release a lot of pain, release the hurt, and that's just through song, that's through worshiping, that's through crying, and then I was able to meet new people in my life that were inspirational and sisters of prayer and worship who kind of guided me, women that are older than me. And some my age, but that were just kind of support systems for me. So I think that did help. Plus the pastor played a really, really, large part and a large role in, kind of coming to visit you and inspiring you and keeping your head up as well. That was very, very important. And I'm definitely blessed and thankful for that.
All right. So, baby, I want you to know this. Me as a man, like I said, I was sat down in that room and I thought about all the things that I did to you, to hurt you. And that was something that I asked God, if he allowed me to get up out of this cell and back on the streets, I would never do it again. So we might fuss and fight still, but we don't get no physical stuff going on. And that's because I think a man who hit a woman is a sucker, is a mark, is a punk, is a bitch ass nigga. You know what I mean? And I ain't neither one. So I will never hit you again, baby. And I want you to know I love you, all right?
I love you too, but I want to ask, can I ask you a couple questions as well?
Go ahead.
I want to know that when you, before when you were as abused, because you were very abusive.
Yes.
It was excessive. Yes. I don't know how I'm still here.
Yes.
When you would hit me, why did you feel, like, how did you feel about that? I understand what you said about a man that hits a woman is a bitch, a coward, and all those type punk. I understand that, and I'm not saying that that's what you were at the time. But in your mind, as you know, less strengthful as I am than you, and talk, my mouth, it's just my mouth, right? Me saying things that get under your skin, vice versa. We did that to each other. But how did that make you feel to see me bleeding, to see my eye blacken, to see, you know, me hurt? How did that make you feel knowing that you had just done that, but then you say, sorry, it won't happen again, and then you do it again, and this went on for over 10 years?
All right, how I felt, I felt bad about it. You know, a lot of times when I done it, I was like, damn, why I just hit this woman? Damn, I know I can hurt this woman. I shouldn't do this, right? So I felt bad about it. But it goes back to my childhood, like you said, seeing my mother, getting hit on by my stepfather. My dad really didn't hit my mom. She used to hit him. So it was the other way around.
Still violence.
But it was violent still. Seeing my uncle beating on his women. And, you know, growing up as a teenager, you know, in Oakland, you know, we thought that shit was cool. Oh, man, fuck this bitch. Let me slap this bitch. Boom, right? And we thought it was cool. So as I got older, I bought into my relationship. And I'm just thankful that I'm one of those guys that kind of found where I was going wrong and kind of fixed it. You know what I mean? It took some time, but, you know, I'm still a work in progress, but I would not hit you.
I have another question for you. And the next question I have for you is, you say that you won't hit me again and only time will tell. So far, so good, but still only time will tell. The question, the big, big question I have is, why do you continue to verbally abuse me? Why is it okay for you to call me a bitch or call me out of my name? Whether it be stupid, you acting, you know, you crazy, you know, you have to think about the words that you say, that the choice of words you choose to say to a woman like me. And that's because there's nothing about me that is crazy. There's nothing about me that is dumb or stupid. If I can't remember, I can't remember. Repeat it. And unfortunately, as much stress as you're under, we still have to, that goes back to communication. Craziness, there can't be craziness. We both do crazy little joke and stuff on a level of just fun, right? But crazy, there's nothing crazy about me. I'm fully educated. I'm very much aware. I have much common sense, right? I'm very much coherent. But what I don't understand is to this moment, to this day, why do you feel it's okay? And I'm not talking about not getting mad. You can get mad. We all can get upset. We have emotions. But why do you feel like it's okay to verbally abuse me?
I mean, like, again, sometimes I got stuff on my head. Like we spoke last night with Nina and them. And, you know, like, some stuff on my mind that you don't know nothing about. I ain't even said nothing to you about. And, I mean, I'm one of them people where if I tell you something, I kind of think that you got it the first time I told you. You know what I mean? Because, like, think about it. Like, I could be telling you something that's going to save your life, you know, that I might not be able to tell you ever again. So you need to listen the first time I tell you.
I understand that. But there's times when you're not going to be, like, there's times that it just may not be that way. And so instead of you getting upset, you have to be able to understand the other person's view and understand their situation. That's all I'm saying. So if you're on this podcast right now and you're speaking the truth, I'm speaking my truth and I need you to change. I need you to work on that. And it's just saying what you said. I'm a work in progress, but I need you to work harder because that is tearing me down right now to be verbally abused about things that I...
Hey, everyone, you reached the truth. With the Real Dirt Money as your host. It all started a regular day like every other day. Driving around. Got a call to pick up somebody on, you know, some side Uber hustle. as I pulled up to this person's house over here on Ritchie and Nay Street, across street from the little elementary school right there. I'm waiting. I see a car driving down the street real fast with his lights off. It's like, I don't know, 12:45, 1 o'clock, 1 a.m. I hear somebody shooting, so I turn the music down. Then I'm like, damn, somebody knocking. So I look to the side, and my window crashed in. They shooting, boom, 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 boom. I duck down, I drive off. Going over speed bump, boom, 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 boom. Made it right on 73rd, went up about two blocks. My car cut off. My engine block got hit. So all my fluid leaked out. The car wouldn't start up no more. I ran to the neighbor house. Bam, on the door. Hey, I've been shot. Somebody called an ambulance. They turn their light off. I go to their neighbor house, right next door. Bam, on the door. Hey, can you please call the 911? I got shot. I've been shot. They turn their lights off. So I had to run back to the car, grab my cell phone. I start calling my wife, my brother, my mom, my cousins. I call hella people. Didn't nobody answer the phone. Mind you, it's 1 a.m. I was like, damn, I need to call 911. What's 911 number? Like, I'm panicking, bro. Like, you know, I'm like, damn. So I finally get myself together. I finally remembered 911 number. I called them and they had me. I let them know where I was. They was like, all right, stay where you at. When you see us flashing the light, come out. So I see him coming up the hill. I jumped in the middle of the street, flagged him down. He like, all right, where you been shot? I said, I don't know. He said, all right, lay on the ground so we can cut your clothes off. I said, you don't got to do that. I pulled all my clothes off in the middle of the street on 73rd. Finally contact with my wife, finally called me back through a FaceTime. I FaceTime her, so she called me back, and she like, I'm like, baby, I've been shot. I'm on my way to the hospital. So she panicking, and she jumped in the car. She on her way to Oakland. So mind you, the ambulance come. They pick me up, take me to Highland. Come to find out, I got non-life-threatening wounds. Got shot in my stomach. Got shot in my arm twice. So I had to eat and take a shit before they released me. By then, a couple hours pass. My wife, my brother, everybody at the hospital. All right, they released me. Boom. Hop in the car. My brother and one of my niggas, DF, you know what's happening. Yeah, they like, man, we gonna follow you home. Make sure you get in the house right. I'm like, no, we got it, man. I'm like, man, I'm just sleepy, bro. I wanna go home, kiss my kids, and go to sleep, bro. I'm tired as fuck. So we make it to Tracy. We stop at 7-Eleven, and I think we got a Sprite, something like that, a soda, something. I don't know what it was, but we got something from the store. Hop back on the freeway. As we pull up, I'm like, why is the gate closed? She like, I don't know, baby. I didn't close the gate, but maybe one of the kids got up and closed the gate. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, no kid gonna get up at no 3, 2, 3, 4 in the morning to close no gate. So I said, all right, whatever, baby. I just want to get in the house. I'm like, get out the car. She get out the car, open up the gate. When she opened up the gate, she hopped back in the car and started driving up. When she started driving up, a dude stepped from the side of my building, of my house, and started shooting into the car. I jumped in front of my wife, and I pushed her down. And I was just like, damn, I'm dead. And he ran. So when he ran, she's screaming, ah, I'm shot. I'm like, you ain't shot. Come on, get out the car. Open up the garage, we run in the house. I'm thinking like, damn, man, I'm gonna run in this house and I'm gonna grab something. I'm about to come back. But I'm like, nah, I might die. You know what I mean? So I ran up in the house. My kids called the ambulance and everybody holding a towel on the wound. And
I'm just bleeding out my neck, bleeding out my stomach, my arms, my pinky. It was crazy, man. And so I go to the hospital again, and they released me 2 hours later for non-life-threatening wounds. This time I got shot in my neck, my chest, my arm two more times, and my left pinky. So I'm like, fuck, man, we gotta move. So bro and them, everybody came to the house. We moved from one house to another house, rented out the house, and started living my life regular again, just getting up, going to work every morning, you know, which was about a couple weeks later. And about a month and a half later, I'm upstairs trying to go to sleep, just got off work, and I hear a big ass boom, boom. I'm thinking the kids down there fucking shit up. It was the police kicking in my door. So when they kicked in my door, they ran in the house. And I'm like, man, don't shoot. I got kids in here. They like, what's your name? And I told them my name. They like, get on the ground. They handcuffed me. They run to the house. They find a gun, a pink and black 9mm handgun, which was my wife's gun, legally hers. They took that shit, and they arrested me. I didn't know what I was arrested for a while. When I found out, I didn't have had a nervous breakdown, man. They arrested me for 2 counts of murder and 1 attempted murder. So I went to jail. I was down about a year of my life, facing a death penalty. My wife came out the pocket $92,000. I had my youngest son. You know, I'm just rambling through it. Had my youngest son was saying he was gonna kill himself, you know, if he don't get his daddy back. And that really hurt my heart, to see my kids and my wife and my kids just growing up without their daddy in their life. So make a long story short, I go to trial. Well, I start trial, start jury pick. And the second day of trial, my lawyer and the DA was asked to approach the bench. They went to the back, to the judge chamber after that, and they spoke about whatever they spoke about. And my lawyer walked up to me, and he say, hey, motherfucker, you going home today? And I looked at him and said, what you say? He said, you going home today. And I raised my hand. I said, Your Honor, can I go over there and sit in that corner right there? I need to go cry. And he said, yeah, why not? You're a free man. So I went over there. I cried like a baby. And that's my story. You know, so now I'm here. You know, speak to the younger generation, try to guide some of these brothers and these girls in the right direction. Let them know the street life ain't the life that nobody should be living. I mean, it's overrated. You know, the streets lie to you. It's no brotherhood, no sisterhood like it's supposed to be. The streets came about when it was a group of people who lived in one neighborhood, who grew up together. And who family knew everybody. You know, I had friends who I knew everybody in their family, and they knew everybody in my family. So that right there was the street life was about. I was born and raised in 69 Village. Raised with no guidance. Pops died when I was 11 years old. Mom was on drugs. So I kind of raising ourselves. You know, my older brothers was in jail, incarcerated. And, you know, we raised ourselves. So just rambling through it. You know, I hope you guys like this podcast. I hope you guys subscribe to this podcast. And, you know, throw questions out there. Ask me questions. I'm going to answer them. And hope you listen to the next one. Have a good day.
What's going on, y'all? This the Real Dirty Money with the Truth podcast. Hey, man, I'm riding through the Altamont Pass in Northern California right now. I'm on the freeway. But listen, man, this shit get on my fucking nerves when I see a motherfucker say, man, this one hurts. Man, you niggas say y'all gangsters. Why the fuck anything hurt to a gangster? You feel me? Stop being so sensitive, you emotional-ass niggas. Acting like y'all with that shit, but y'all really ain't about that shit, man. So stop playing games with y'all self. And, you know, for the families who family been a victim to this, to these streets, stop acting like your family member ain't did nothing wrong. Your family member then probably did so many things that you guys don't know about, and sometimes you guys know about. But it was all smiles and Hallmark cards when it was doing bad, huh? But now that they paying for their actions, everybody upset, everybody mad. Y'all need to calm that down and readjust and snatch your family member up and tell them, hey, you're not doing the right thing. Everything you're doing is wrong right now. Get that shit together, y'all. Stay focused, man, for real, for real. I just thought I'd get that off my head because it was lingering on my head just from just seeing certain things and watching certain things. Like, you know, again, if your family member was a gangster and was out here causing harm to other people's family, why the fuck you sitting around moping, acting like he just God gives to the world? He fucked up and he did the wrong thing too.
I'm gonna touch on this subject real quick. You reached the Real Dirty Money, the Truth podcast. You know, I don't edit nothing. I keep everything raw and uncut because I'm a raw and uncut nigga. I'm a street nigga. I know people from the streets. I know people in law enforcement. I got law enforcement friends. I remember being incarcerated in Santa Rita. It was a friend of mine who I seen who was working here. But I really didn't put them on the spot and really say nothing to them because they doing their job and I'm just another inmate. So, you know, that's another subject. But anyway, I want to touch on the fact good police work. It's not that police do good police work. It's that they got so much, it's easy for them to put a puzzle together. You have stoplights. You have police informants, which is on the streets is considered a snitch, a rat, a motherfucker that climbs in sewers and shit like that. You know, those devices they got now is helping police with their work. Then you have people who tell their friends and everybody else what happened. Then you have people who told on their self. So it's not that police is doing good police work, y'all. Just to throw that out there for y'all. But, you know, that's just something to put on your mind and linger in. And for all you gangsters or guys who consider yourself gangsters, please stop committing crimes. I'm going to tell you this, man. It don't feel good to be away from your family not knowing if you ever going to see your family on the streets again. Not knowing if that wife that you left out there on the streets, if she gonna be having other dicks all inside of her. That don't feel good. It don't feel good not knowing your daughter who you left out there, who might start prostituting or just giving herself away to any and every guy. Even a friend. It don't feel good knowing that your girlfriend, your baby mama, your wife moved on, and that guy she with is a sexual predator, and she didn't even know. And now your daughter get touched on, but really it's your fault because you left them.